Come on, come on, come on, come on.
Oh no.
Seriously? Come on.
This game sucks.
Welcome to Omniscient Idiots.
Welcome to this week's episode of Omniscient Idiots. I'm here with my co-host, Daniel Varges, and our guest this week, Nick, the DM Sensei.
Hello.
Hello. So, Omniscient Idiots is all about confessing your DM sins and hopefully learning so that going forward, you don't repeat them. And what we mean by that is for any of those that play Dungeons & Dragons and who host sessions, quite often, there's a lot of things to catch up on and to juggle at the same time. And we all make mistakes. But the important thing about that is that we learn from those mistakes and we make sure that we don't repeat them going forward. So what is our subject for this week, Allison?
It's kind of one of the most difficult things to balance out in your game. You really want to say yes to everything because that creates the most interesting stories. It keeps your players engaged. It keeps things flowing and it can take your story in directions that you never anticipated, but could be really glad that you did. At the same time, though, we have some stories about where that might have gone well and may have gone wrong.
Exactly. And it is a slippery slope. Of course, you want to say yes to as many things as possible, but occasionally there are those requests where you gotta just facepalm and say no or a natural 20. And that is the only available options.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a story about my own personal experience in my first ever time DMing, where I asked a group of my D&D friends, who are also all very experienced and DMs in their own right, to make my life miserable for my first ever time DMing, because I truly believed in the sink or swim mentality. And Nick can attest to that as he was in that party.
Oh, that was fun.
Oh, it was pain. My main regret about saying yes to everything is that we had this entire little arc where they had to defend a town from a orcish horde. Very cliche, very traditional fantasy. And I had planned there to be a joke at the last second of the little mini campaign in that the local noble of the area would ride in with his platoon of knights and have to, I see that things have been vanquished. A good noble as ever, and take the credit. And it'd be kind of silly. I did forget that I asked my players to make my life miserable. I've never seen bloodlust enter so many people's eyes in the same moment. And what would have been a pretty good beat to end the session turned into a 30-minute drawn-out thing where they tried to absolutely murk this pompous noble.
To be fair, we didn't try. We did succeed.
You did succeed. And this is where I should have just said yes, is that I tried to throw as many obstacles as possible in front of your path. So I started getting frustrated because I was trying to steer back towards my planned ending for the sessions. Instead, it ended up being a dragged out, not very fun slog to just murder this noble, which was successfully done, I believe, was it with a lightning bolt?
No, was heat metal.
It was heat metal. One of the worst ways to go. And that, in my experience, was actually one of the things that I regret the most, is that I hadn't just been like, oh, well, he was a silly, corrupt noble, and you guys took care of him, and ba-dum-bum, and end the campaign, right? Is there a plan to be anything bigger than that? But my own kind of pride got in the way, and I think one of the really easy pitfalls for a lot of DMs is that my vision for the session got in the way compared to what my players want to do. Now, that's something that a lot of DMs struggle with. Is that something that either of you have experienced?
Personally, it wasn't, I don't think, necessarily pride or vision of the session necessarily. But back when I was DMing my first campaign with you, Dan, I had a mentality very much in terms of when a player wants to do something, I thought of the reasons that it wouldn't work rather than oh yeah, this is cool as hell, let's make it work. A lot of things, a specific story I have is, you remember the cultists.
Yes, I do.
Yes, a group of almost perfectly circularly arranged cultists around a potential blood sacrifice that went wrong due to a blade barrier spell eviscerating most of them.
This is one of my favorite moments in D&D where I just saw the perfectly haloed outline of enemies. I'm like, I have a spell that hit every one of those squares and not the one that the prisoner's in. This is my moment.
I mean, hey, man, I set it up and you knocked it down. But No, the blood sacrifice ended up going off as one of the cultists managed to, right before he died, finish the ritual and kill the sacrifice, summoning a Baylor, who grabbed one of the party members and began flying away before dropping her from about, 600 feet in the air or something like that.
Yeah. There's one detail that you're missing about how that happened.
Do remind me.
So when we started the campaign, Nick was kind enough to allow us all to have one wondrous item, and we rolled for them. And my cleric, Pyre, happened to roll the Cloak of the Montebank.
Right.
So if you don't know what the Cloak of the Montebank is, it's a magical item that once a day lets you cast Dimension Door, which is a spell that lets you step through a doorway and appear anywhere up to 500 feet from where you currently are, and you can bring one person with you. And when the Baylor was flying away, my first thought was, he's got a hostage. He's out of range of all my spells. Well, almost all my spells. And so I used Cloak of the Montebank to appear 3 feet above the Baylor, a few hundred feet in the air.
Yeah.
And I did try to Nacho Libre a Baylor in midair, which didn't work out that great. I'm not going
to
lie to you.
That I said yes to. You were allowed you to make actually, that
to
check.
Your credit, you absolutely did.
But you did manage to grab the other player character and wrestle her out of the Baylor's grasp. The thing that I wish I had said yes to, along with one other that I'll get to, is as you were falling, as you were about to hit the ground, you wanted to use Gust of Wind to, like, Iron Man propel yourself away from the ground.
I was so confident.
By, like, shooting a gust of air down and, like, every action equal air opposite pushing. Reaction. Yeah. But I went, why wouldn't this work? Well, the Gust of Wind spell isn't, like, emanating directly from you. You're not literally shooting air out of yourself. So, like, in terms of physics, you would just enter the Gust of Wind and be pushed further, like, faster into the ground. Which, like, makes sense, but it's also not that cool. So I should have just let you do it. You ended up doing, I think, like, create water or something to slow your fall anyway.
You Minecrafted it?
Yeah, basically
I literally did Minecraft it. Yeah. Oh my god, that's a really good pull.
But no, so it didn't end up being a gigantic deal. And it wouldn't have been a gigantic deal if I'd just gone, like, yeah, make a friggin', I don't know, like an Arcana check or like a spellcasting check to try and, like, bend this spell in this way, even.
I think that's a really good point there, too. And I think, Allison, it's something that, like, you kind of mentioned before when we were first playing this idea, is that it doesn't always have to be a straight-up yes. But it should be an opportunity for a yes.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
And that's something that I think is important, like, especially there, Nick. Like, it doesn't always have to be, like, you came up with a harebrained scheme, and I want to be a fun DM, so I'll say yes.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? But instead, be like, no, if this is something that you want to do, it's feasible in the world. Roll for it.
At the end of the day, the dice are the arbiters of fate in the world.
They really are. One of my favorite methods of handling plans as a DM that your players can cock, that you're just like, these little mother... And, you know, because players will do that, right? Like, it's part of the fun of being a DM. But one of my favorite pieces of advice is from Murph from NADPOD and Dungeon 20, where he says, all right, sure, if you want that impossible thing to happen, roll 20. Go ahead. I'll wait. And if it's a viable thing, he'll allow it to happen if they roll well, right? Because dice are the arbiters of the game, exactly like you said. And let them decide for you, because then you're not the bad guy anymore, right? Like, you gave them a shot. Players will be less angry if they had a shot than if it's just not allowed at all.
Yeah, no matter how improbable the shot is. Like, you can give them a 5% chance to succeed on something. They'll fail and they'll be like, well, if I had only been better.
Unless you are Ellie from Dimension 20.
Oh, Jesus, and yeah.
As a DM, you're Brendan Lee Mulligan, because Allie Beardsley has just proven to be the crippling hole in that plan so many times with those nat 20s. Good lord.
To be fair, you have some story-appropriate nat 20s yourself.
Oh, God. Yeah. Here, before I get in that, Allison, do you have a story from, like, your own experience about this exact rule?
I'd say kind of. Piece of advice I'd say is that you can say yes to things and still have them plan to not work out, just as long as, like, you can give them a shot, like you said, but they cannot work out. You can just roll to see how well they get out of the fuckery that they've gotten themselves into. I know you watch Critical Role.
Yes, I do.
Do you remember the dragon arc from the first campaign?
I cannot forget that arc.
Yeah. They had a battle where this ancient red dragon showed up in the middle of the square during a festival, I think. And
yes.
There was no way they were winning that fight. So they instead had to think on the fly, okay, we can't fight this thing. This battle feels hopeless. Their next solution that Matt let them do with the say yes to everything was, okay, we can't fight this. How are we going to save as many people as we can? Mm-hmm. How are we going to get out of here alive?
Mm.
Yeah.
Because in a fight that you can't win, you have to look for other solutions. And that is on being creative with your players. And
yeah, no, it's like that moment was one of those few times in D&D, because I think I was watching live when that happened.
Same.
And it was one of those moments where you're like, okay, that as a D&D player, when Matt described an ancient red dragon among four other dragons summoning and like swooping down on the city, I'm like, okay, all right, they're a little like what, 14? No, no. And like, I think, and spoilers for campaign one of Critical Role, I think in like the first moment, they just murked the king, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Thordak like ate him or something?
Sovereign Uriel, right?
Yeah.
He just died.
Yeah, and that is such a, like a bad bitch moment from like a DM to just be like, you know, this city that you've been adventuring around in for how many years now, and this figure that is like a contact and a powerful ally. Yeah, he's dragon bait. What you gonna do? And then just like watching their faces be like going through those calculations where like, oh, we're not winning this.
Yeah. Also, just like the catharsis of Matt having built up Tal'Dorei, built up Iman specifically, and then just got to smash it like a sandcastle. Like that must have felt so good and so terrible at the same time.
It's something that I've been toying with for a while now, because as players get higher level, the threats get more real, right, and more powerful. It's really like looking at all the things that I've carefully spent hours preparing and world building and crafting, and be like, okay, which one of the things am I going to wreck today? It's a really great feeling for higher level campaigns.
There.
Yeah. Do we have any closing thoughts on the topic of say yes to anything? Beautiful. No thoughts here. Just what we want from Omniscient Idiots.
Head empty.
Head empty. Thank you so much for joining us this week, Nick. You're a lovely guest and had some great stories about some times, which I do agree. I did wish had happened, but I've actually seen the results of that lore experience in your later games. It's something that I think you're well on the way to kind of coming back around on.
Yeah. Live and learn.
Exactly, right? And listen, that's all D&D is, right? We're all a bunch of nerds playing like pretend. Live and learn. What's the harm?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining us this week on Omniscient Idiots. And words are hard, and I had a thing planned for this. And then head empty, Omniscient Idiots. This is Allison Todd and Daniel Vargas. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
Until next week.